From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Thursday, February 26th. I'm Abby Larico. When the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline launched nationwide, the goal was to give people quick access to help, and it's being put to use.
We have been seeing a month-over-month increase in utilization of 988, and so we are also working pretty hard to keep up.
Some states are able to respond to these crisis calls quicker than others, though, and funding plays a key role. That reporting's coming up after this news on The Gateway. The state-appointed board for the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department is asking for a 35% spending increase from the city for operations in the coming year. And Mayor Kara Spencer says that will lead to massive layoffs and cuts to city services. The Board of Police Commissioners certified the budget yesterday, with Spencer casting the lone no vote. The vote is not the final step, but it sets up a potential battle between the city and the board appointed by the governor and approved by the legislature. Spencer said in a statement that she received the proposed spending plan the night before the board was to vote on it. She's asking for the board to work with the city before finalizing the budget. The mayor's statement went on to say, as it stands, the budget could mean massive reductions to city services, including trash collection, road repairs, and park maintenance. St. Louis Public Schools officials sold two long-vacant buildings to the city's development agency this week. As STLPR's Kayvon Mansouri reports, the buildings had been vacant for nearly two decades.
City officials agree with SLPS to purchase Cleveland High School in Dutchtown for $300,000 and Marshall Elementary School located in the Ville for $200,000 this week after months of negotiations. The city's development arm will seek out developers to turn the schools into housing or mixed-use properties. The buildings are just two of the many vacant former school buildings owned by the district. In recent years, the two schools have become nuisances to the surrounding neighborhoods. Just last week, Cleveland High School caught fire yet again, causing minor damage to one of the building's towers. The school district plans to knock down six other vacant schools this summer, but hopes prospective developers will step forward with redevelopment plans. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
Annie Malone, Children and Family Services leaders say they're still waiting to receive a much-needed $1 million in North City grant funding a year after the gift was announced. The funding would go toward repairing its 100-plus-year-old headquarters in the Ville neighborhood of North St. Louis. The organization recently announced the cancellation of its historic annual parade this year, in part because of a need to focus on building issues. Dion Broxton is a spokesperson for the St. Louis Development Corporation. He says the agency has approved about 42 organizations as part of the community enhancement and facade programs, but he says the agency needs to be extra careful in the aftermath of controversy over who it gave grants to.
We had to go and review and make sure, you know, people were safe and proper protocol was followed.
Broxton says the goal is to have that money for the groups out the door by next month. The site of the historic Club Imperial in St. Louis's Walnut Park West neighborhood moved closer to redevelopment this week. As St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin reports, the now vacant building may soon be the target of a wrecking ball.
The fabulous! The out of sight! Ike and Tina, bring them out! Ike and Tina!
Ike and Tina Turner recorded a live album at Club Imperial in 1964. That's just one milestone at a venue also famous for its swing dancers, who spawned a variation on the jitterbug known as the Imperial. But Shelton Anderson of the Land Reutilization Authority told the LRA board the long vacant building can't be saved.
This property, unfortunately, has sat vacant and abandoned for several decades. The roof structure itself has collapsed. The second floor, as well as the first floor, all unfortunately have collapsed.
No demolition will happen until another vote of the board after receiving bids from contractors. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
The developers behind a proposed data center near the site of the Armory will receive a zoning hearing in March. This follows months of debate and public pushback over the project. The proposal will need a conditional use permit to move forward. The latest plan pitches a $3 billion tech district that would see the Armory become an office space. The nearby Famous Bar and Macy's warehouse property would be redeveloped into a 120-megawatt data center. The hearing comes as the city mulls new zoning rules for data centers, recently proposed to the City Planning Commission. The hearing is set for Thursday, March 19th at 8:30 a.m. and can be accessed via Zoom. A pair of St. Charles Republicans have filed legislation that creates infrastructure requirements for data centers. As STLPR's Sarah Kellogg reports, lawmakers say the bill is not intended to be anti-AI or anti-data center.
The bill creates new requirements for data centers regarding electricity and water usage. Representative Mike Koslow is a sponsor of the legislation. He says the bill requires large load consumers, like data centers, to pay for the necessary costs to provide them with electricity, such as grid infrastructure upgrades.
We have to make sure that that cost is not passed on in any situation to consumers. We want to protect our residents first. Before we start to look to reap the benefits of this kind of investment into our state.
Koslow believes Missouri has a lot of strengths that data centers are looking for, like an abundance of water and cheap power. He and his colleagues say Missouri is a place where data centers can operate with little impact if the right guardrails are put in place. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
Democrat Raja Krishnamoorthy says his top priority in his quest to take over for longtime U.S. Senator for Illinois Dick Durbin is preserving the American dream. The Chicago area congressman is one of the three leading candidates in March 17th's primary. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer talked to Krishnamoorthy for the Politically Speaking podcast.
Krishnamoorthy was born in India and grew up in Peoria. He says his family benefited from public housing, food assistance, and public schools to reach the American dream. But now he worries that path is going away. Krishnamoorthy labels himself as a radical common sense prosperity Democrat.
I believe that, you know, our party has to be one that primarily focuses on making sure America remains a country of economic opportunity, regardless of whether you're working poor, middle class, or growing a business. And so I've spent much of my time in Congress on these issues.
In his nearly 10 years in the U.S. House, Krishnamoorthy has belonged to the party's center-left caucus. His main primary opponents, Robin Kelly and Juliana Stratton, have labeled themselves as progressives. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
To hear that full interview, you can find Politically Speaking at stlpr.org or wherever you get podcasts, like The Gateway. A proposed bill in the Illinois legislature would lower the state's legal blood alcohol limit for drunk driving from 0.08 to 0.05. As STLPR's Katie Grovich reports, the bill would set up Illinois as a testing ground for lower DUI thresholds in states with significant alcohol consumption.
The bill would make Illinois the second state in the country to lower its DUI limit below 0.08. Utah became the first state to do so in 2018. After the change went into effect, the Utah Department of Public Safety reported a nearly 20% decrease in fatal crashes. The department also said it did not see a sharp increase in DUI arrests, but Utah residents consume alcohol at uniquely low rates compared to other states. A 2023 report from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism estimates Illinois residents drink at more than double the rate of Utah residents. The National Transportation Safety Board estimates the change would result in an 11% decline in deadly alcohol-related crashes. If the bill passes, it will go into effect in 2027. I'm Katie Grovich, St. Louis Public Radio.
A note before we continue, this story is in part about suicide. Mental health hotlines can be particularly valuable in rural areas where there may not be any therapists or social workers close by. That includes 988, the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. It launched less than 4 years ago and has already responded to nearly 20 million contacts. But support for 988 is stronger in some states than in others. Harvest Public Media's Michael Marks reports.
The 988 system was designed to give people in crisis an easy-to-remember number that's available 24 hours a day. Every state has its own set of call centers with trained operators, and since the hotline started taking calls in 2022, demand has increased nationwide.
We have been seeing a month-over-month increase in utilization of 988. And so we are also working pretty hard to keep up.
That's Monica Kurz, Chief Administrative Officer for Health Source Integrated Solutions in Kansas, one of the state's 988 call centers. She says the service is a necessity for rural Kansans.
We know that in our rural and frontier counties in Kansas, folks might be traveling hours to get to their nearest mental health clinic. And this is a way to access services right away without that kind of distance barrier.
Responding quickly is essential. A caller frustrated with a long wait time might hang up. Plus, if they spend 2 minutes on hold, the call is rerouted from a local facility to a national backup center. A backup operator may not be able to connect someone with local resources, says Lauren Moyer, chair of Missouri's 988 Task Force.
If someone is really struggling with substance use and needs connected to a residential substance use bed in the moment, somebody from another state is not going to have access to that information.
When the 988 hotline launched, the federal government paid for it, but states were expected to pick up the tab eventually. That has not happened in Texas yet. Jennifer Battle is vice president of the Harris Center in Houston, which fields 988 calls. During a legislative hearing last year, she said the state's call centers get around 200,000 calls annually, and the state needs to step up and help fund the program.
As impressive as these numbers are that we're able to serve with the current federal funds, these funds only allow for us to be able to answer on average 84% of the 988 calls that originate in Texas.
The federal 988 bill recommended that states pay for the program through fees on telecommunication products. That's how 911 is largely funded. Only a dozen have done so, including Minnesota and Illinois. But in Missouri, they're doing things a little differently, dedicating money from the state's general fund each year. Lauren Moyer, the Missouri State Task Force chair, worries about sustainability.
You know, general revenue support, it's its own line item, and that's not guaranteed long term.
Oklahoma doesn't have a recurring fee to support 988 either. According to State Representative Kevin Norwood, a Republican from the Tulsa area, there's little appetite in the state legislature for a new tax.
Before I became a legislator, that idea was introduced and it gained no traction.
Norwood is now sponsoring a bill that would create a trust fund for 988, which would ensure the money is only used for the hotline.
When I jumped into it, I was like, okay, we need to make it where it's not just a short-term fix, that it would be long-term and sustainable.
Texas has followed a similar path. Lawmakers there have been unable to pass the telecommunications fee through the legislature. In 2025, Texas established a trust fund, but the balance is currently zero. Jonathan Pertle studies 988 funding at the New York University School of Global Public Health.
Those trust funds are a strategy, but if there's not funds in the trust fund, it's not going to have that much of an impact. But it's something that some states are trying. It's a signal of effort, I suppose.
Pertle is near the end of a five-year study. He's analyzing the funding of 988 systems in all 50 states. So far, he's found that those with long-term dedicated funding for staff are generally more efficient.
The big thing is people, right? The staffing, the people to work in these call centers is the main thing.
He may have a new data point in the near future. Missouri's legislature is set to consider a 988 funding fee later this year. I'm Michael Marks, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains, including STLPR. If you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway. Oh, and while you're here in your podcast player, make sure to check out episode 2 of Meet Me. In this one, host Luis Antonio Perez dives into an ambitious attempt from 2019 to reunite the city and the county. He interviews civic leaders, elected officials, and longtime political voices about how the plan gained momentum and why it failed, plus what its collapse reveals about power, trust, race, and regional identity in St. Louis. Give it a listen, and then we'll be back in your feeds with another episode of The Gateway tomorrow morning.